there, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. It is my pleasure to present to you a new episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. If you're joining us for the first time, we're so glad you're tuning in. If you're a regular listener, welcome back. The Next Step is the voice of Armodoxy, a weekly podcast that looks at life through the lens of Armenian Orthodoxy. Our seventh season is well underway, inspired by our spiritual pilgrimage to both sides of Mount Ararat. Father Vazquez's messages are timely, thought-provoking, and based on Christ's principles of love, faith, and hope. At epostle.net, we reach out to those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, the disenfranchised members of the church community, and the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. We produce these shows free of charge and make them available for download at epostle.net, as well as via multiple podcatchers, including Apple iTunes, Blueberry, Stitcher Radio, and our very own epostle app. You can also subscribe to receive email notifications every time a new episode is released. However you choose to tune in, we invite you to sit back, turn up the volume, and get ready to take the next step.
Priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you to The Next Step, episode number 361, a podcast that puts it all together, that connects the dots between the spiritual, the emotional, the physical, between the ancient and the contemporary. In fact, we look at the very fabric of our life through one of the most ancient of all spiritual lenses, namely Armenian Orthodoxy, polished up for today. Ready to take this walk with us? Sit back and relax. Put your feet in front of you, and let's take the next step. So good to have you with us. Yes, I know my voice is sounding kind of muffled. We are using a different microphone because we are on the road, and we couldn't bring the whole studio with us, so we are doing this a little bit remotely, but I hope you'll be able to pick up bits and pieces, if not the whole thing. I know. I'm being dramatic right now. Hey, great that you're joining us. We were in Brea, California, a small little town in Orange County, a rather conservative group of people. And I was the guest speaker this morning. It was the mayor's prayer breakfast. And I was honored to be there. And I had a chance to reflect about, well, the Armenian genocide. But here's the catch, okay? No. You're saying, okay, here he goes again. Now, wait a minute. We are always presented with this challenge, okay? We have the Armenian Orthodox tradition, one which I say has been polished up, and we're calling that Armodoxy, and it's developing, you know. Here we are in our seventh year, and we're almost finishing that. We're going to be starting our eighth year in just a couple weeks, and we've been talking about Armenian Orthodoxy from the beginning, but somewhere along the way, it got to be known as Armodoxy. And somewhere along the way, we picked up so many non-Armenian listeners, ethnically non-Armenian, who were finding a value in this production, in this message. And here's the question that always comes up to me. How about the message of genocide? Can it go beyond the Armenian community? Well, obviously it can, because genocide is not limited to the Armenian people. But how about the brand? How about the brand that we've been talking about? Specifically, we're talking about countering that act of genocide with this incredible power, the power of love, to be able to leverage that love. Are there applications? Obviously, we throw it out to the Armenian community, but how can it fit? And we've always contended that, yes, it can fit on a global scale. It has to. I mean, that's the whole premise of this show, too. What is Armenian Orthodoxy? What does Armodoxy have to say to the rest of the world? Does it have a message? Well, we gave it a shot this morning. Okay, we were at the mayor's prayer breakfast. And there was about 300 people in the audience. I think we counted 6 or 7, maybe 8 Armenians, okay? And so what do we got, about 292 non-Armenians? Okay, so we gave it a shot. And I'm going to share that with you, okay? In the second portion of today's show, right after the song, I'm going to share that with you. I want you to hear the speech. I want you to hear the way it gets delivered. Because to me, this is how we're presenting Armadoxy to the world. And I am sharing it with you because I know this is a question that keeps coming up. You know, is there an application beyond the ethnic makeup of the Armenian people? And yes, there is. Let me just answer it. Yes, there is. And we basically took that first step today in showing that, yes, it can work for the rest of the world. Anyway, that's coming up in a few minutes. That'll be right after our song of the day. Hey, we've got Nairi Hamparyan. She is our In His Shoes correspondent in Washington, D.C. And if you haven't seen the pictures, if you haven't seen the blogs, well, get to our website, inhisshoes.org, or check us out on Facebook. She's been posting in some great, great pictures. Of course, part of the 100th anniversary of the Armenian commemoration, of the Armenian Genocide commemoration, has continued over out into the United States Capitol, Washington, D.C., where both Catholicoi, His Holiness Karakin II, as well as His Holiness Aram I, are in attendance, along with, I believe, the president of Armenia, has come to the American shores to make this presentation, to talk about the commemorative activities. There was an ecumenical service in Washington this evening. As I am recording right now, I believe it was just a couple hours ago, because Nairi, just a bright, bright, bright young lady, has gone over to Washington to cover this for In His Shoes. And she's already sent back quite a few pictures and some details. She's going to be blogging about it every evening. So do check it out. I'm just really excited that we were able to have somebody from In His Shoes, somebody who is absorbing it, coming back with the stories, because, you know, these are opportunities for all of us really to engage and network beyond ourselves, beyond our local communities. And that in itself is really the focus of today's show. Do we have a message beyond ourselves? Well, let's talk about it in terms of Christianity. Jesus brought a message, and he brought it to a group of people. And this is, I think sometimes we get confused when we get into ethnicity. I've heard many people who will talk about Jesus as being a Jew. Jesus' makeup is a Jew. No, that's very, you know, it's a foreign idea in Armadoxy, and I'll tell you why. If the idea is that Jesus is God incarnate, love, the manifestation of love, you cannot ascribe in an ethnic makeup to neither the deity nor to the manifestation of love. Here's an interesting thing, and I've been wanting to look into this. I've got to find somebody who can help me do some of this research. Hint, hint, any listeners out there. But I was talking to Rabbi Limley. She was on a trip with us. She actually, she was over at USC. She was in charge of student religious life on the campus. She was the dean of religious life. And I had a chance to talk to her about this issue. Now, think about it. The Middle East is basically made up of many, many people who are very patriarchal when it comes to their system of defining family. Interestingly enough, in the Jewish community, ethnicity is defined by who? By the mother. And this is interesting. So if the mother is Jewish, then the child is a Jew. It doesn't matter with the makeup of the father. And quite opposite from most of the other communities within the Middle East, and I don't want to talk for all of them. I'm not I'm not an anthropologist. I don't know all the details, but it just looks like it. I mean, you look at the makeup of of the Middle East, and it's very patriarchal. That is, it's a man's world, okay? The man, the father defines who the family is, or the family is defined by the father, the makeup of the father. And here you get into the Jewish situation where the mother is the one who defines the ethnicity of the family. And this was just in passing. I had questioned, like, why did this take place? And I asked Rabbi Lemley at the time, and she told me that it's been about 2,000 years. 2,000 years. 2,000 years? Well, what happened 2,000 years ago? Jesus was born. Bing, 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 bing. Bells started going off in my head. Wait, where's the connection here? Big connection, right? Because if you trace Jesus' ancestry based on his mother, yes, he's a Jew. You trace it according to his father, well, then he's God. You have a problem there. Because he doesn't belong to an ethnic group, to one group of people. He transcends the human realm, and he belongs to everyone. He is everyone. He's inside you and me. Interesting, huh? I'll let you connect some more dots. I know. I want to leave it, because that's not really the point of what I'm trying to talk about, but certainly in the religious sense, it's the case to be made that really Jesus' message is beyond any ethnic group. And when you talk about chosen people, quote unquote, any people that you look at has a unique history that makes it uniquely chosen as well. Certainly in the case of Armenians, you know, we'll talk about chosen. I mean, Garden of Eden, Genesis 2, chapter 2, verse 10, Garden of Eden right there in Armenia. The flood happens. The ark lands where? In Armenia. First Christian people, Armenia. Talk about chosen. But here's the challenge. You really can do this with any group of people, because any group of people does have a unique set of circumstances, and in there are some good times, bad times. But in the case of the Armenians, you look at it and you say, wow, here's a group of people that somehow have made it, because there's a proof system, okay? You look at the history and they said, okay, they have arrived at resurrection. And that's what I'm going to be talking about in a few minutes. When you hear the speech, I want you to just listen in, because I'm presenting it to you, first of all, out of interest, but second of all, to get your comments about it, because this is the manner in which I am presenting it to the larger audience. And this is evolving, so that the next step becomes, from here, you're going to see it developing, and it'll become a book, and it'll be published, and we'll get the news out, the message out. But I'm so thankful for you, the listeners, because I treasure your feedback, and I would love to hear your feedback about that as well. Anyway, coming up in a few minutes. Right now, let's take a break. We'll listen to the song of the day and be back with more. Enjoy. some great Armenian minstrel music. I don't know. I'm just in the mood for it. I love this kind of stuff. Anyway, I hope you enjoy it. That's from my dear friend Vahe, who supplied me with all kinds of music, and I stumbled across that track a couple days ago. Just been playing it over and over. I love it. Hope you did too. Okay, as promised, I want to share with you a speech that I gave this morning. It took place at 6:30 in the morning. Okay, there was about 300 people. I'd say 270 to 300. I don't know. Quite a filled audience who came for breakfast. It was the mayor's prayer breakfast. And it was just really exciting for me because you're seeing within a community people coming together, and the idea of prayer is important. And I know it's a political event, it's the mayor's event, but there was a very special charge in the room this morning. So we got up at 6:30 into the room, 7 o'clock, exactly right on time. This breakfast began, there were a few speeches, and then they gave me an opportunity. I was keynoting this morning. Now, the reason why I'm playing it for you right now is you've heard all the material, by the way, but it's the way that we are presenting it to the world. How do you present Armadoxy to the world so that it is not like labeled as an ethnic tradition? Rather, it is a viable option in the vast choices of different different means of spiritual fulfillment. Look at Armadoxy and find the truth and find the beauty in it. So I'm speaking about the genocide. I'm connecting with Armadoxy in a way that I hope that some of you seasoned next steppers will understand where I'm going with. Most importantly, I'm presenting it to you here. Love to hear your comments. What do you think about it? The methodology by which it is presented. So here it is from Berea, California. This is from this morning.
It's good to be here, and thank you very much, Marty. Thank you, all of you. I want to thank the Berea Ministerial Association, the Kiwanis Club, and all of you for coming out here today. The singers were incredible this morning, and just seeing the activity that happens before 7 o'clock in Brea. It's as usual, right? Just like with my wife, we're moving here. If you can deal with another Armenian, imagine. I'm very thankful today, and thankful to be here, and thank all of you for inviting me. But I'm really thankful that of our country. And this morning I was brought to tears when we sang the Star Spangled Banner. It means something when you don't have it, when you've lost it. And coming as an Armenian immigrant, I'm one generation removed from the genocide. I come on behalf of a people who are very, very honored to have a place like America, the United States, where we are able to practice what we believe, our faith. And I want to share with you a little bit about that belief, because this also happens to be a very special year for Armenians. It was 100 years ago in April 1915 that the Armenian genocide took place. Marty just told you about his grandmother, my grandmother too. At age 22, she was out in the desert. She was already a widow. She had already buried her 2-year-old child in some sand that she always referred to as the unmarked grave. And she had another child, my uncle, that she was walking through the desert, who had malaria and all kinds of diseases that we can't even think of today. And if my grandmother's or Marty's grandmother's story is tragic, terrible, the real tragedy is that it wasn't unique. It wasn't unique. We're talking about 1.5 million people. Orange County is 3 million people. Half of Orange County annihilated, taken away, all within the course of a few years. 2,000 Armenian churches were leveled. Last year I had an opportunity to go with my wife to the historic lands. It's rubble. Some bones even that you see there. And this is what I want to share with you today, that out of that genocide, we're here today, 100 years later, really as a miracle. The Turkish government, one of the officials in the Turkish government had said there would be one Armenian left, and that Armenian would put him in a museum. One Armenian in the museum. And now, today, you know, the National Geographic used to call us starving Armenians. That's a term came up with in the 1930s, the starving Armenians. Hey, guess what? We're not starving anymore. In fact, most of Fresno and Central Valley of California, which feeds most of the world, is owned by Armenians. The governor of this state, one of the fifth largest economy, was an Armenian, George Dukmejian. Guess what? The miracle has happened. The miracle is there. We pointed to the cross, and we saw that after the cross there was an empty tomb, and we took that to heart. We believed that. And so today when we heard the Beatitudes, it's absurd. Blessed are the meek, they shall inherit the earth. What blessing is it? What meekness are we talking about? Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the peacemakers. What are we talking about? Who believes this today? Well, we do. And that's a message that I think we have to really focus in on today. That as a faith community, we've got to believe in this message because it's given to us not by a person but by Jesus Christ. And He's the one who said, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you. That's absurdity. Absurdity. Complete absurdity by this world standard. But at some point we need to start changing the metaphors that we talk about. We need to start talking about that love. Because I'm convinced that you don't fight fire with fire. You fight fire with water. We got to start believing that. We got to believe what Jesus Christ said. And here I am, proof of it. That after the cross, there is resurrection. Now I'm going to share with you a couple stories because all of this made more sense to me when I made a really obscure trip, and I believe that God had sent me there. It was back in 2006, my professor from USC called me. I had done my thesis with him about the Armenian Genocide. And as a genocide survivor, we interviewed people. And he called me some 30 years after, 25 years after I had finished my work at USC. He says, are you interested in going to Rwanda? I said, Rwanda? Wow, that sounds interesting. He says, I'm taking a small group of people there, educators there, seven of us. And he said, they just went through a genocide 10 years ago. And I said, well, that should be interesting. If I had a chance to go back to Armenia 10 years after the genocide, what would I see in Armenia in 1925? I said, let me go to Rwanda, 2006. Let's see what we would find over there. And I accepted the invitation. And that trip really became the moment that changed my life. 23 hours. We were on a plane. We went from LA to London, from London to Nairobi. Nairobi, a small plane where this is after post 9/11, and they gave us metal knives on the plane to eat. And I'm going, okay, we're out of American airspace. And we get to Rwanda, and some lady picks us up. And we asked her, is it... were you waiting long in the airport? And she said, no, I just sit in my house. When the plane comes over my house, I go to the airport. We were traveling on the Air Rwandan fleet. There was one. And we got to Rwanda 23 and a half hours later, tired, exhausted. Now, where would you take guests? Tired, exhausted, 23 hours.
maybe to the hotel. Maybe you'd say, have you had something to eat? They take us to the Genocide Museum. Why? Because it's so real in their lives. There's nothing else. Genocide is different from war. I want you to first, let me give you a little bit of an explanation. Armenians, who are the Armenians? Armenians, we're the people at the base of Mount Ararat. If you read the Bible, Genesis chapter 2, verse 10, gives you four rivers that come together. Those four rivers, if you put them on a map, that's Armenia. The second time God starts life, Noah's Ark lands on Mount Ararat. Twice. That's beautiful. Two times. But the third time was that we became the first Christian nation. The Apostle Thaddeus, in his evangelical ministry, went to Armenia. And like all good Armenians, he thought that, you know, he would get some shish kebab and some great baklava. Instead, they filleted him. Yeah, he was martyred. He was martyred in Armenia. We're not too proud of that. But he laid the seeds of Jesus Christ in Armenia. He laid the seeds. And Armenia became the first Christian nation, the first nation to accept Christianity as a state religion. And so here was this son of this Armenian past going to a place called Rwanda. And we get to the museum, and I start looking around the museum, and I read story after story on the walls. And it's stories that are no different than what my grandparents went through. In the middle of the night, they'd come and they'd arrest the men. They'd take them away and you'd never see your father again. The women were brutally raped in front of their children. In front of their children. The children had to watch that. And then they were killed. Women who were pregnant had their stomachs slashed. Children were taken away either as slaves or were taken away in captivity. And I'm reading story after story in this museum, and I'm saying, wow, nothing has changed. It's exactly the same story. The only difference was the color of skin. I'm in Africa, and I'm looking at these pictures of people with black skin, dark skin, and here I am, it's the same story, and it's just a color of skin. And I'm crying like a little baby, and some lady comes up to me, she was a staff member, and she said, what's the problem? Why? By the way, over there they speak French. So she said something, and I recalled my high school French. I said, no parlez-vous français. And she looked at me and she says, oh, you're from America. I said, yes. She said, why are you crying? And I said, because my grandparents, these are the story of my grandparents. And I said, they're genocide survivors. And she said, the question that really changed my whole life, she said, which genocide? 2006, our little pocket phones have more information in them than the Apollos and the ones that landed on the moon. We can change the entire world. We're connected. And we're talking about which genocide? Sure, because the Armenians were the first ones 100 years ago, and it's unresolved. And so 15 years after the Armenian genocide, Adolf Hitler gets up and he says, I'm going to march into Poland. And his top commanders, his generals, said, you can't do that. You can't annihilate a group of people. 1938, Adolf Hitler says to his top command, he says, after all, who remembers today the annihilation of the Armenians? Sure, because the world had forgotten. But we can't forget. After the Armenians, there was the Holocaust. There was Cambodia. There was Pol Pot's regime. There was Rwanda, Bosnia. And today, there's genocide taking place in Darfur. 24 different counts of genocide since the Armenian genocide, and only 11 of them have been accounted for, where the perpetrator has taken responsibility. 24 of them. And I'm sitting there looking at this lady, talking to her, and she says, come with me to another room. She takes me to another room, and guess what? In the middle of Rwanda, there is an exhibit to the Armenian genocide. I'm looking at that, I'm going, my president at that time, Bush, and today Obama, refused to say the word genocide. And here in Rwanda, guess what? I'm the hero. They're talking about Armenians. You see, genocide is different from war. War, you know, there's no rules, of course, anything goes. But in genocide, it's a systematic program of annihilating a group of people. In other words, the government says, this group of people does not need to exist and should not exist. In fact, it is not okay to kill Armenians. You are commanded to kill Armenians. Imagine the law. Imagine such a law where you are ordered to kill a certain group of people. That's what genocide is. And I'm seeing this in the middle of Rwanda, and everywhere I went throughout the next few days, I would recount stories of that my grandmothers told me. And then finally on the third day, I realized something is really weird in this country. There was nobody with gray hair. There was nobody that had gray hair. I did not meet one person with gray hair. Well, why? Because everybody was killed 10 years ago. I was meeting the children of genocide. They were now in their late teens, early 20s. And so I asked about that, and they said, well, wait till tomorrow. We're going to be going out into the villages. And then they took me to a village. And that's the first time that I met people with gray hair. It was a gathering of 200 widows and orphans. And it was in a large area, a tent outside. And 200 of these widows are there, gray hair. I was puzzled, why are they here? Why weren't they killed? And so the guy that was standing with me, he said, how many of you are widows? They all raised their hand. And then he asked the next question, and they all kept their hands up. He said, how many of you have HIV/AIDS? They all raised their hand. And then you realize what man's inhumanity meant, the extent of it. These people were allowed to live. Why? Because they would do the job of the perpetrator. The only thing that they could do is infect the rest of the population. So you talk about inhumanity, you talk about a genocide. You want to get rid of the entire gene pool. Keep these people alive, and they will infect. That's where man's inhumanity can go to. And so today, we stand here as a faith community. What's our response to it? What about these words that Jesus said? Love your enemies. Pray for those who persecute you. What about blessed are the meek? What does that mean? Well, I stood up there and somebody said, Father Voss can say a few words. No, don't ask me. What am I going to say to these women? They've seen genocide. What am I going to say there? Anyway, they pushed me up. I got in front of them. I said a small little prayer. I said, God, tell me what to say, you know. So I looked at them and I said, I'm Father Boskin. I'm from the Armenian church. And they looked at you. Most of them are Catholic. Most of them, 80% of the population is Catholic in Rwanda. They all understood the idea of a priest. They all understood Christ. And I said, I'm a priest of the Armenian church. And I said, our church has been around since the year 40. And then the guy interpreted, he said, 1940. I said, no, not 1940, 40. That's when Thaddeus came to Armenia. And they're just looking at you with blank expressions. Who cares? Who cares about this history? And then, I don't know, God gave me that little view. For that first time in my life, I was completely, totally colorblind. I was completely blind to the differences between us. And I looked out at them and I said, I'm looking at you and I see my grandmothers. And I really did. Because each one of those women were exactly my grandmother. And I turned to them and I said, I hope you looking at me can see your grandson. That one day you're going to get out of this. They jumped up. They started hugging me, kissing me. They're holding me like this. That's when it occurred. That's the message. That's what we got to take to people. Hope, love. What did Christ teach us? That's the message. That's the treasure that we have. That's the pearl that we have, that Christ says, you drop everything and you go and you get that pearl. And I sat there for a good hour. We were talking, conversing with everyone. And then we made the ultimate American dream. I stood up in front of them along with the others that had come from America. We said, it's great to be here with you. And we said, what can we get for you? What would you like? You know us Americans, right? Tell me what you need. You're in this camp over here. Give me a list. I'll go to Costco. You want blankets? You want food? You want water? Costco's got enough of it. We'll get it. That's how we think, right? What do you want? What do you poor people want? And you know what they said? Don't forget us. Don't forget us. It was the only thing they asked for. Keep us in your prayers. Don't forget us. Okay. Blessed are the meek. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are you when you are persecuted for my sake. We've seen that. Now we have an obligation. We have not only an obligation, a responsibility to change the metaphor, to reach out with love, because it's the only weapon. It is the only weapon in this world that is sustaining, that will get us through. We keep fighting fire with fire. It's time that we apply a little bit of what we believe in. If Jesus says, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, why are we arguing against that? Why are we stopping and saying, no, not that guy. No, not that one. It's time for us to be colorblind. It's time for us to look beyond our boundaries. There's a beautiful expression. It says, for God, all wars are civil wars. We're all His children. Every one of us. And the only way that we can win in this world is by taking that absurd route that Christ said. It is absurdity. But at the end of it, everyone who looked at the cross of Christ, saw Him dangling on it, saw His life being beaten out of Him, and His blood dripping, everyone said, that's absurd. How could He do that? He thought that His love would conquer everything. Look at Him now. But 3 days later, they went to the grave, and the angel said, why are you looking for one who lives among the dead? We've got to be looking at that living Christ. He's a living Christ that is in our lives right now. Not among the dead. Not in some kind of fable. Not in some kind of book. But in the eyes and in the hearts of everyone around us. It's a lesson that I learned, and I wanted to share it with you. Christ's message is not something that is relegated to absurdity. And sometimes we as a faith community make it absurd. We come up with too many rules and regulations. When Christ opened His arms and He said, come to Me, all of you who are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. We have to be the witnesses to that. And the only way to witness it is by not going to Costco and filling up people's lives with stuff, but filling them up with hugs, with love, with compassion, with reaching out and not forgetting. And so when we pray, when we get together and we pray, sure, we pray for our needs. We pray for our families. But don't forget your family are those widows with HIV/AIDS in Rwanda. Don't forget that there are people right now in Darfur who look different from us, who speak different from us, who are being persecuted, who are being the object of a genocide. In other words, one group of people has said, enough of these people, let's annihilate them. Adolf Hitler asked, who, after all, today speaks of the annihilation of the Armenians? I want to answer him, I do. And I want all of us to say, we do. We will speak about it. When there is injustice in the world, when there is this kind of tragedy in the world, we cannot keep our mouths closed. That is what the Christian is called to do every single day of his life. Not with words, but as Mother Teresa said so beautifully, always always preach the gospel, and whenever necessary, use words. Whenever, if it wasn't her, it was somebody else. It was somebody else that was good. But I don't know when they'll pick on Mother Teresa, so I'll throw her name out today. Because I was saying it, I said, oh, wait a minute, did I get my saints mixed up? But you got the idea. It's not about the words, it's about living that. And I felt glad I came to those. I came to that that crossroad in my life, and I wanted to share it with you. Trust God. God will take us into directions that are over and above what we can believe. Armenians are a living example and a witness to the resurrection. We are landlocked. We don't have, we're at the crossroads. Armenia is at the crossroads of three continents: Asia, Europe, and Africa. Every kind of barbarian has been through there. Every kind of despot has tried to rule that area. We've never had military power, never had military strategy, and guess what? We are not only alive, we're living. And that's because of the love that God has placed in our heart. Trust in that love, trust in God, and God bless all of you. Thank you.
Susie here again. Before continuing with this broadcast, I wish to take this opportunity to thank all of you, our listeners, for your prayers, kind expressions, and donations. You make this podcast possible. Your listenership and support has allowed us to grow and expand our ministry around the globe. The Next Step has given us the opportunity to touch many lives and create lasting friendships. For this, we are immensely grateful. At epostle.net, we are determined to bring apostolic evangelism to an electronic world. We would love to be able to continue this ministry for as long as there is a need. To do so, we must be able to cover our expenses. Things like hosting, server space, software, and equipment are an essential component and ongoing need for getting this message out. So, we look forward to your continued support. Thank you, and God bless.
Well, thank you, Susie. Today's podcast is really about taking the next step to the next step, and we're getting ready for our eighth year, starting off our eighth year in a few weeks, and it gets us, you know, these are just anniversaries, but also opportunities for us to reflect on how we've done, to gauge it and see where we're going with this. And I'm throwing it out there to all of you, because as Susie made the announcement, you know, our strength is you, the listenership, and it's through your prayers, through your donations that we move forward. If you find value in this, please drop us a line. The greatest thing you can do, more than a check, more than anything else, is share this information with other people. I truly believe that people listening to the message, people, if you give people something that has value, people are inherently good. They will pay back for it. And, you know, this is really a ministry that is all dependent on people doing it. I'm the first person who will tell you we don't do ministry for other things. In other words, if you need to run your ministry by selling products, something's wrong. The message isn't there. So what we're doing is we're trying to give the message and know that in return, people will respond. And all of you, thank you so much for your donations, for your prayers to keep this ministry going forward. As Susie said, get out there on the webpage. There's a donate button. Click it. You'll feel good about it, okay? Well, we are at the end of today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoy putting it together for you. We'd love to hear from you. You can drop us an email at feedback@epostle.net. I want to do a big shout out for our dear Nairi Hamparyan, who is in Washington, D.C., covering the ecumenical gathering and the different various gatherings on the 100th anniversary at the nation's capital. And I want to thank all of you, our listeners, for tuning in with to us. Remember, it's inhisshoes.org, and you'll find everything, including Nairi's blog, the images that she's sending over from Washington, as well as a wide assortment of all the things that are happening within In His Shoes. inhisshoes.org. And remember, Epostle is the voice of Armadoxy. Find it at epostle.net. For the wonderful crew who put today's show together, for Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, this is Father Boskin inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Take your breath, cut out.